When I was in high school and in college, I participated on the debate team. I was pretty good at it, by no means amazing. Some of my peers were much better. In one form of debate, the type that I did for 5 of those 7 years, you try to fit as many arguments in your allotted time as you possibly can. And it is so specialized, all of the people competing and judging have been doing it for years, that you learn to speak as fast as possible. I had friends who could speak twice as fast as I ever could at my fastest, but I did learn to speak really quickly, and I can still do it. It's kind of a parlor trick. See, I'll reread the paragraph I just read at debate speed. When I was in high school and college, I participated in the debate team. I was pretty good at it, though by no means amazing. In one form of debate, you try to fit as many arguments in your allotted time, and it's so specialized that you learn to speak as fast as possible. I had friends who could speak twice as fast as I could at my fastest, but I did learn to go quickly. I can still do it. It's kind of a parlor trick. See, I'll reread the paragraph I just read at debate speed. Now try taking notes that fast, which we had to do too. Imagine how many words I could fit into the sermon if I spoke that quickly, and how little of it you would understand, let alone have time to process, think about. I mention this because there I was Friday morning at a coffee shop writing this sermon about slowing down. Slow me down, Lord. It's going too fast. About not rushing. And there at the table next to me was a woman who was speaking to her friend at high volume and higher speed. You know the type. Her normal speaking speed, and everyone around us could hear it, was almost as fast as that debate speed I just showed you. She would have been great at debate. She's innate, just so fast. And just sitting there and listening, you couldn't help it because of her volume, I began to feel more and more anxious. Her pace made me nervous. It was sort of reverse hypnosis. Instead of growing sleepy and relaxed, you felt the need to keep up. It was going so fast. And of course, the conversation was mostly about planning her wedding. And I thought, Lord, have mercy on her officiant. And the photographer, and the caterer, and the musicians, and the florist. If the officiant begins the rehearsal as I do, she'll start with the words, breathe in, breathe out, slow down, no rush, it's okay. This is often the advice that I give to others in all kinds of different life situations. Slow down, be patient, conserve your movements, take one step at a time. That's how the journey of 1,000 miles begins, at your feet. I give that advice all the time. I've given it to you many times. Hearing it myself, that's harder. Sometimes I move too fast. It's about rhythm. When I'm spiritually grounded and breathing in and out, I can do everything or almost everything with a deliberate pace. I can be patient and wait without anxiety. But if I get into a more frantic rhythm, then I do everything more quickly. Eat too fast, drive too fast, type too fast, talk too fast, think too fast, and miss what's going on under the surface. Do any of you have ever the same feeling? That sometimes you feel like the hare, and sometimes you feel like the tortoise, and who is it who wins the race again? Slow and steady. I want to say clearly that there are moments to hurry. There are times when things need to be done quickly to save those in distress or to make good and efficient use of the days we are given, which, as we know too well, are limited in their number. But to live at such a pace all the time is exhausting and often counterproductive. We make mistakes. We have to do it over again. Slow down. Breathe in and out. Wait. Wait for it. Wait for it. Here it comes. Wait is our theme for the month of December. As we work to transform our world from inhumanity to love and joy, what will we do? Sometimes we will wait. We will wait in expectation, waiting for what is not yet to become. We will wait in frustration, waiting for the change to come, but not being able to make it happen yet. We will wait in mystery, unsure of how things will turn out. Letting go of our ability to make the seed become the flower, we may plant, but we cannot make it grow. We will wait in peace, attending to the power of this very moment, not rushing headlong into the next. What I want to do today is talk about the spiritual virtues of patience, the spiritual work required to be patient, the advantages of engaging in such work, and the good news that developing a discipline of waiting can help you connect to yourself, to others, and to the holy in ways that sustain and transform your life and the world for good. So come with me then to the waiting room. Sit there in those chairs, those plastic chairs with me. Let's wait together. There's a reason they call us patients when we go to the doctor, right? You've heard that one. Are you feeling patient? That your name will be called when it's time, and that's okay, and you can just sit there, and it's no problem? Or are you feeling anxious? Like, come on, I'm here at the time of the appointment. Why can't this place ever run on time? I've got places to be. Let's go. Somewhere in between, maybe? Of course, there are things that will make us feel more or less patient, right? Perhaps you are there for a routine checkup, and you have a good book to read, maybe, or perhaps, surprise, you see an old friend there and sit together and catch up, and you have plenty of time afterwards, no hurry. There is soft but pleasant music in the background, and the chair is comfortable. The guy at the desk smiled and was nice, and you know your doctor, and you trust her, and you like her. Are you feeling patient? It's kind of nice even, right? But if we flip the switch, we can become anxious and hurried. Something is wrong in our body, but we don't know what exactly. It hurts, we're uncomfortable. The magazines are all old and boring, and there's no cell signal for your smartphone down here in the concrete block basement. The person next to you is fidgeting and muttering to themselves. No one's talking to each other except to occasionally complain about the wait. The TV is blaring in the corner, and it's that news channel that you really can't stand. Interspersed, of course, with commercials where announcers yell about used cars and what a great deal you can get if you hurry. Everyone who works there is surly and gruff. No surprise that. And in an hour, you need to be at an important meeting, and you can't be late for it. And you don't know how this long this is going to take. Feeling anxious? Feeling like you'd rather suffer in silence than in this waiting room with all its commotion? How can we transform this anxious experience into the more patient one? The unpleasant into the pleasant. It isn't just about our surroundings. It's about us too. Given that waiting is and will always be part of life, how can we wait with spiritual integrity and indeed wait in order to grow as a person? And not just waiting in waiting rooms, and not just when we're queued up in line, but also in those times in our lives when we are waiting for changes, waiting for things to develop or to happen, a child to be conceived or born or grow up, a job to change, the process, whatever it is, to be finished so we can move on, move ahead, our heart, our mind, our body to be where we want it to be. We wait. How do we make waiting worth it? From the difference between these two experiences, I want to suggest three things that might help us wait better. Make friends. Be present, let go. Make friends. This is number one. Make friends. You're standing next to someone in line. Say hi. Talk to them. Maybe you're worried, what if they're a crazy person and they talk my ear off or they're just weird? Well, remember that they might be thinking the same thing about you. So go ahead, give it a shot. If life is what happens when you are making other plans, friends, more often than not, are the people you meet while you're waiting together. Get to know someone. Maybe it will be a pleasant chit-chat. Maybe not. Maybe you'll make a real connection. But either way, the experience will be better for both of you. And how about making friends with, you know, yourself? We often have trouble waiting because we are uncomfortable being with ourselves, uncomfortable without distractions, without doing something. To just be with our own thoughts can be disconcerting, terrifying even. So take the time that you are waiting to make friends with yourself. This, of course, is part of what the practice of meditation is about, at least in some traditions. Can you meditate while you're waiting? No pillow, no incense, right there with the linoleum and the wailing child. Try it. Notice what you think and feel. Be with yourself. Daydream and see where your thoughts go. Maybe you'll have an insight, an uncomfortable thought that pushes you to do something about an unresolved conflict in your life. A puzzle might be solved in your mind if you just stop moving for a while. Stop filling up every minute with activity. Find the stillness inside yourself so that you can find yourself. Making friends while you wait, whether with others or yourself, making friends is about becoming. Instead of seeing waiting as a waste of time, see it as a time to make connections, to learn and discover. See it as precious time, a gift of spaciousness in a world of distraction. This applies to more existential waiting too, not just waiting rooms and admissions lines. If you feel like you're waiting to graduate, get promoted, retire, fall in love, try using the time to make friends, to connect with others and yourself. Build connections, nurture them. It doesn't just make the time go easier, as that saying goes. It prepares you to succeed in the next stage of your life, to be happy and flourishing. When you leave school, your friends will be the greatest thing you take with you. Those who enter retirement without friendships, uncomfortable being with themselves or others, find themselves lonely and agitated, right? We've seen it. And relationships? There's a reason everyone gives the same advice. Don't focus on finding the one to fall in love with. Make friends, lots of them, and possibilities will naturally emerge in time. Get comfortable with yourself, and you'll be comfortable with others, and you'll be able to become whoever you are becoming. Make friends, become, connect. It is pleasant to wait when you like the company you are with, even when the only one you are with is yourself. Be present. That's number two. Be present. Be when and where you are. One of the great spiritual tasks is the task of presence, to be alive to this very moment. It's spiritual work because the holy is to be found in every place and time, at least we so believe. But only if we have eyes to see and ears to hear will we notice all the beauty and the power and the joy and the love which is around us. But when we're waiting, we're often not where or when we are we? We're thinking about the next appointment, the one after the one that we're waiting for. We're thinking about some other place that we need to be. But you'll get there when you get there. And so be where you are when that's where you are. Lift your eyes. See the people around you. Attend to what's happening right now. That old chestnut about how it's not the destination, it's the journey. That one, it's true. It's one of the ones that is true. If you learn to be when and where you are, even if you don't really like when and where you are, then you'll have the skills to really enjoy when and where you are somewhere wonderful. The ability to pay attention, to be at peace and connected to all that is, to see beauty and wonder, that's a learned skill. It doesn't come naturally. You can cultivate the ability to be amazed by being present wherever you are. This is the true Unitarian Universalist spirituality. to see the holy and the wondrous everywhere, not just in the exalted and the exciting places, but in the mundane and the difficult. Or in the words of Franz Kafka, you do not need to leave your room. Remain sitting at your table and listen. Do not even listen, simply wait. Be quiet, still, and solitary. The world will freely offer itself to you to be unmasked. It has no choice. It will roll in ecstasy at your feet. Simply wait. Be present where you are. Notice the world, its glory and tragedy, its power and simplicity. Be present. That's number two. Make friends, be present, and let go. Let go is number three. I think the thing that most annoys me about waiting is that I'm not in control, right? That's what's really frustrating. I don't get to decide when the doctor will see me now, or when the light will turn green, or when I'll be ready for the next great adventure. I can't make the person in front of me go any faster. I'm not in control, and this is what annoys me most, and it is why waiting is such good spiritual discipline. Because most of the time, we're not in control. We may have influence, but we are not in control. We are not gods, and we are not the universe itself. The great spiritual task of our lives is to recognize our independence and interdependence with powers larger than ourselves, yet that we are still connected, woven together into this great fabric of existence. When you're waiting, practice letting go. Let go of when you'll be done waiting, because it's not up to you. Let go of your expectations of what it will be like when you get there, because it will be however it will be, and expecting it doesn't change it. Let go of your need for speed or efficiency or being the one in the right. Try, if you can, to even let go of your awareness of time itself, the illusion that you can conquer time. Let go of time and control and expectations. Let go of them so that they will let go of you. Interfere with things and you'll be defeated by them. Hold on to things and you'll lose them, so says the Tao Te Ching. The sage doesn't interfere, so he doesn't fail, doesn't hold on, so he doesn't lose. He helps all things become themselves. For the last 16 years, I've been trying to practice this Taoist releasing, this letting go, letting the process, the sacred way, the spirit do its work. Sometimes I'm really good at it, and sometimes I am awful at it. It's hard spiritual work. I've been trying to wait in such a way that isn't waiting, that is a time for connecting with others and self, a time of being present and letting go. Sometimes I do well and sometimes not. But I can tell you that when I do it, when I follow the advice that I've just given you, when I live as much like the sage as I possibly can, I'm so much happier, less agitated, more fun. I enjoy life more. I have insights into my life and work and the world itself. When you wait with a peaceful smile inside and out, you aren't really waiting at all. No, instead of waiting, you're living. Instead of waiting, you're living. Today is the first Sunday of Advent and the fourth day of Hanukkah. It's a time of expectation, not to be rushed through, but to be savored, as a time to prepare for what may come and change the world. It's a time when we're not sure that we can wait long enough, not sure that we'll make it, that our supplies will last, that the oil will last. But with grace and hope, miracles can happen. Advent and Hanukkah teaches that waiting is a sacred time unto itself, a time for intentionality, for connection and ritual, a time to become oneself. And yes, a time to remember and to anticipate, but also a time to just be. Be in this time, right now. In the minutes and the hours and the days and the weeks and the years ahead that you might find yourself waiting. Waiting for things small and big, good and bad, new and familiar. When you find yourself waiting, I hope and pray that you will take the time to become, to make friends and be present and let go, to live more than to wait, to become, and thus to help the world become a place of joy and love for all people. May all our seasons of anticipation be seasons of purpose. May our in-between time be sacred time. May we be patient gardeners of all that is yet to flower. And let us sing together. It's 2:23.